Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts. Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where? Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
And I am Megan McCarty-Carino in for Kai Rizdal. Thank you so much for joining us this Thursday.
It is Thursday indeed. We are so close to the end of the week, and we are going to talk about the news and end in some Make Me Smiles, but let's get started with a news fix. Megan, why don't you go first?
Okay, so I have been watching this change that the CDC made to its guidelines. I've been seeing a lot of response from folks on my timeline, people texting me. Some people are pretty upset about it. Some folks think it's reasonable. So I thought I'd just, you know, get into it, have a little chit chat about it, see what people think. So, you know, it's not, there aren't any huge changes in these revised CDC guidelines for COVID. They kind of affect school policies, they might affect some businesses. Obviously, CDC guidelines are not law, and a lot of states and counties are sort of doing their own thing anyway. But I think, you know, a lot of school districts, businesses, they look to the CDC, counties look to the CDC in setting their policies. So this is, of course, important, and it just signals to everyday people, I think, you know, kind of what to pay attention to. So they have changed quarantine guidelines for unvaccinated folks with a known exposure to be the same as vaccinated folks, which is that you do not have to quarantine at all unless you test positive. So if you know you have some sort of contact with someone who has COVID, don't have to quarantine if you're unvaccinated, which brings into line with what the guidelines have been for those who are vaccinated. And that sort of is recognizing, you know, that so many people, the majority of people in the country and probably the world at this point, have some sort of immunity to COVID, either through vaccination or natural infection or some combination of both. So this distinction between vaccinated and unvaccinated has kind of lost a lot of meaning. They no longer recommend asymptomatic screening for most workplaces, for schools. So that's, you know, kids were tested in order to go to school, or if you were getting tested in order to go to work. They no longer recommend that, you know, just sort of like screening every week or every few days or that kind of thing. Might
just
recommend
testing
it
for the sake of testing.
Exactly. Sort of surveillance testing, I guess, is what screening, surveillance testing. Don't recommend that. No more 6-foot rule. 6-foot rule is taken out of their guidelines. I think for a lot of us, this feels like, six foot is not the magic thing. But, you know, a lot of schools have still kind of been having to apply this
like
to classrooms.
You know,
exactly. Spacing out desks, having these specific cohorts and the lunch and everything like that. So it could be kind of more of a big deal for schools. In general, this is just, you know, kind of a shift to more individual responsibility away from institutions like workplaces, like schools, like the government, you know, as kind of a recognition that we are in a different phase of the pandemic, if you want to still call it a pandemic. I know that term gets thrown around and debated in a lot of ways. Greta Massetti, who sort of announced some of these changes at the CDC, was quoted saying, this guidance acknowledges that the pandemic is not over, but also helps us move to a point where COVID-19 no longer severely disrupts our daily lives. So it does feel like a bit of a, it feels like a little bit of a turning point. You are laughing because you clearly...
Perhaps I have COVID right
disagree.
Now, and it's disrupting my daily life.
I love that you have not, I mean, I kind of do not love that you have not let it disrupt your daily life in quite the way that, you know, I would hope that you would, i.e., you know, taking some time off from your marketplace duties.
Yes. Yeah. I know. I'm a terrible example. Anyway,
you
go
are.
Ahead.
But, I mean, of course, I'm never going to say, Kimberly, go away. We don't want you here. But I just, you know, people can rest. It's okay. It's
people
okay
rest.
To rest.
I rested today. I rested a lot today. I slept for like 15 hours today.
Very good. Very good.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, I've been getting text messages from friends who are really upset about this, you know, that it's signaling the wrong things. I mean, my personal sense is that this guidance is kind of following what I sort of see happening in the world, kind of people determining their own personal risk profiles and the risks, you know, for their families at an individual level more at this point, exercising kind of their own judgment around these things. And I think it's can be a good thing for institutions, for the official guidance to feel like it's in step with what's happening in the real world. But I understand that there are some very legitimate concerns. You know, obviously, we haven't reached a point in this pandemic where we have reached a stable state of things. You know, there's just one curveball after another in terms of variants and their effects. I mean, thankfully, we are at a point now, you know, we're seeing the BA5 wave. Each kind of subsequent wave that we have seen as the immunity builds up in the population, we are seeing more of a decoupling with severe disease and death, which is a very good thing. But of course, you know, I mean, there are still huge concerns. There are concerns about what long COVID means for folks infected. There are concerns about, you know, just having these huge waves hit over and over and over again and what it means for the workforce and people being able to go to school. And, you know, so sort of feeling like, oh, we're giving up on any sorts of controls. I understand people have strong feelings about that. And of course, we don't know what's coming next in terms of what the fall and the winter is going to look like, whether there's another variant that could sort of change the game. And, you know, I think we talked on Tuesday to Dr. Celine Gounder, who brought up all of these issues with our public health infrastructure and whether we've actually learned the lessons from COVID, whether we've put in place the things that would be helpful for institutions to put in place that individuals can't do on their own, you know, all of these policies around things like ventilation and indoor air quality and surveillance for variants, paid sick leave, all these kinds of things that do have a big effect, which, you know, I'm not sure if I mean, Celine Gounder was pretty clear that those things have not happened.
But I mean, this is what we've been talking about all along, that eventually we're going to get to a place where we all figure out how we are going to live with COVID, that it was never going to go away. There was just going to get to, we were all going to get to a place where we were going to find a way to live with it, whether we have to do regular vaccinations, whether or not everyone develops some kind of immunity, that we are all going to find a way to have to live with COVID. And I think this is just the CDC acknowledging, okay, we're at the place where pretty much everybody has been sick. I mean, I was one of the holdouts. I mean, and, you know, trying to get out there in the world.
I am one of the last people on planet Earth. And I attribute it to just my vast privilege that I have somehow, you know, avoided it. But,
you know, we all have a different... And so I think it's just this point of like, okay, now that the vast majority of people have either had it or been vaccinated, how are we going to live with it? And how are we going to move forward as a society and as an economy? And I think this is just the CDC acknowledging that. It's scary. It was scary being in airports on the way back from a conference and just no one wearing masks, no one wearing masks on planes.
It's just jarring,
More than likely how I got COVID in the first place, but that's okay. But, you know, like, this is where we are, and hopefully, you know, thankfully, I feel very blessed that I got COVID at a time when I was able to be vaccinated and boosted and have access to services and know that if I get really sick, I can probably still go to the hospital. But I was able to get, like, all of the meds and the vaporizers and, you know, pills and you know, eucalyptus-scented bath bombs that I need to make myself feel better, you know, that I may not have been able to do had I gotten sick in 2020. So, yeah, I think this is just us. We're moving into this next stage. It's still really scary. One of the people who I was hanging out with at the conference I was at, you know, recently had an organ transplant, and it was terrifying contacting her and letting her know that I had tested positive because we'd been hanging out in the same spaces. And so, you know, that doesn't make it any less dangerous for certain populations, but hopefully this new guidance won't make people be silly about it anyway.
So, I mean, let's hope. Let's hope for the best. All right, what's yours?
Who knows, maybe I'll be able to keep this bass in my voice for the foreseeable future, which might be cool. All right, so my story takes a little bit of background in terms of how the government sets rules and regulations. And that is, the federal government will often, if the government agencies think that something needs attention and they have the legal authority to do so, which usually ends up getting debated in the courts later on, the first thing they'll do is they'll put out a notice for comment saying, hey, we, government agency, think that we need to maybe write some rules and regulations on this topic. We're giving you a heads up that we're going to start working on it. Anybody who's interested, let us know what you think about it. All of that to, and so once they get all those comments, then they usually issue a draft regulation or draft rules, then they get more feedback, and then they issue final rules, and then there's legal fights and whatever. Anyway, the Federal Trade Commission put out a new notice calling for input on how tech companies handle consumer data. Basically, the way that they just suck up all of this information about us, package it, sell it, use it to market to us, all of these things that are sort of the default in the way that the internet operates today, they're starting to look at it. It's called an advance notice of proposed rulemaking. This is my medicine head talking. I can't speak. Anyway, they're looking for comment on data collection, algorithmic discrimination, something that we've covered quite a bit on Marketplace and Marketplace Tech, and commercial surveillance, also something we've really covered. And, you know, there's a public hearing on it coming up on September the 8th, and people can give testimony. I anticipate there's going to be a flood of public comment and public interest on this, because this is something that affects everybody. Anytime you feel like, hey, how does, you know, Instagram know that I was just talking to somebody about this topic and now I'm seeing an ad? Or, you know, I was searching for a pair of shoes and now all I can see are those shoes everywhere on the internet. Or I use my, you know, grocery store rewards card and now somehow, you know, the Target thinks I'm pregnant or whatever that is. You know, all of those things have to do with consumer data and consumer surveillance. And, you know, the Ring doorbells that keep an eye on the entire neighborhood, whether you want to or not. All of these things have to do with private companies taking consumer data, often without our permission, and the government is starting to have a look at it. And so, anyway, it's just worth noting, and if you feel strongly about it, you can definitely comment and weigh in and help the government shape the rules. It's one of the ways that our government functions. So, anyway, just wanted to flag that. Let's go ahead and move on. We should get to some smiles, I think.
All right.
Okay, I will go first because one of the upsides of sleeping in a very, like, not organized way the last few days is that I tend to be up in weird hours. So I'm hoping that I will be up late enough tonight to see the Sturgeon Moon, which is supposed to hit peak illumination at 9:36 p.m. Eastern tonight, which is going to be a beautiful supermoon. It's a Sturgeon supermoon, and it's, according to CNN, it's named by the Native American Algonquin tribe after the sturgeon fish that were more easily caught in the Great Lakes and other bodies of water during this time of year. But a beautiful supermoon, which unfortunately will wash out the Perseids, but I still want to at some point see some of those before
this weekend,
they go.
Yeah. The peak, I think is Saturday. But, well, it might be different depending on where you are, but I think the peak over
here
on the West Coast is
Saturday. The problem is that the full moon being bright is going to wash out the Perseids, so you're only going to see
the
very brightest.
The thunder of the Perseids.
Yeah. So I'm looking, this year's barely visible peak will happen at 11 p.m. Eastern on Friday, according
Bummer.
To Earth Sky. But that's okay. You know, you get a beautiful moon as well. So, you know, that's a small thing that's going to make me smile, assuming I'm awake.
Yeah.
What about you?
All right. Well, yes. Speaking of being asleep, I have a little item that some research was recently published and written up by Scientific American about the possibility that perhaps spiders may dream. There was a German behavioral ecologist who, during the pandemic, you know, she studies jumping spiders in Germany. She couldn't go to the lab, so she caught some jumping spiders at home, and she was getting ready to start, you know, doing some of her experiments on them. And she started noticing some interesting things about their behavior at night. It seemed like they were all suspended from the roofs of their boxes, and they seemed to be sleeping, and so she got a night vision camera to watch them at night. There's a video of this at Scientific American if you really would like to watch sleeping spiders. But she noticed that they had these distinct bouts of twitching, much like what we see with humans with REM sleep, you know? If you have a dog, you know when the dog is in REM sleep and they're kind of twitching. At first it seems a little bit alarming. But REM sleep is the part of sleep that is linked with dreaming, which sort of begs the question, do spiders dream? And if they dream, you know, they quoted a philosopher at San Francisco State University, you know, as clues that non-human animals dream continue to accumulate, because I guess REM sleep has also been observed in birds and reptiles and zebrafish. He says, this has philosophical implications that are potentially huge. Dreaming offers an entry point into questions of awareness in other animals. It is difficult to imagine that even a simple dream is possible without something like an ego or an I experiencing it. So it's pretty, gets pretty deep. Spiders dreaming. What do you think spiders dream about?
New web designs?
Yeah. Like beautiful fractal web designs? Bad dreams are like people coming in
somebody
with a flip-flop.
Walking through it. That's cool. I've seen some research about octopi dreaming, and I think that's pretty
cool
too.
Is not surprising. Octopi, they're amazing. They're extremely smart.
And yet we still eat them. Anyway, that's it for us today. that's a deep dive for another day. Okay, so that's it for us today. We will be back tomorrow for Economics on Tap. You can join us on the YouTube live stream starting at 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific. We will have more news, drinks, and play a round of half full, half empty.
And please do keep sending us your thoughts and your questions. Our email is makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a message at 508-UBSMART.
Mm. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Our intern is Olivia Chow.
Today's episode was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Bridget Bodner is the senior producer. Donna Tam is the director of On Demand.
Yeah, I was very entertained by that CDC guideline today. I was just like, huh, nice timing there, friends.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.